Our boy's best friend is his mother. She just goes a little mad sometimes. We all go a little mad sometimes.
Here we have a quiet little motel, when in fact it has now become known as the scene of the crime. Let's get down to business.
Hey zombies, and welcome to another episode of the Resurrection of Zombie 7 podcast. This week on the podcast, we're going back to the Bates Motel one more time. We have not learned our lesson yet. We're going to be looking at the movie Psycho 3. With me tonight, as always, is Morty. He is alive and well after his little run-in with sharp knives last week. That was not a fun trip to the emergency room, I can tell you that. And with me today as our special guest host is the little buddy to my big buddy, Mr. Tyler Bonney.
Hey, what's up, man?
Tyler is the guy who, he's been doing some graphic work for us on the Zombie Reckoning Channel 4 at midnight on Saturday nights, hosting old school horror movies, and I'm sure everyone in the listening audience has some sort of horror host that was local to them. That's, you know, these really corny, cheap, campy horror host sets where they'll play a scary movie that's public domain, so they don't have to pay for the rights of anything. But that guy for me was a guy named Sammy Terry, and you can look him up on the internet, kids. There's plenty of pictures. I already posted a picture of him on the Resurrection of Zombie 7 podcast Facebook, and if you didn't see that, then shame on you, because you should be on the Resurrection of Zombie 7 podcast Facebook page. That was a mouthful. Tyler, your job is also to slow me down when I start talking too fast.
Ron, calm down, buddy.
Thank you. But see, I actually met Sammy Terry once when I was 6. And then when I was 20, I want to say 27, I was sitting at work one day, and I all of a sudden, I just had an epiphany. And I just said, Sammy Terry, that sounds like cemetery. I finally got the joke.
Wow. That's great. That's great. I'm glad you reached that level.
What's really awesome about it is my best friend, the guy I was roommates with for 8 years, randomly texted me like 2 days later, and I hadn't talked to him for like a week, and he was like, did you know that Sammy Terry sounds like cemetery? The guy who played Sammy Terry, Bob Carter, he passed away earlier this week. He was 83, so he lived a long life. I just wanted to give a little dap to Sammy Terry, my personal nightmare from the time I was like 4 to about 10. And I still go ballistic and get half chub whenever I see him on TV if they run a rerun or something.
Yeah, some of my earliest memories, actually, my grandparents had cable. We didn't at our house. So when Sammy Terry was on, I was always told not to watch it, but of course I did. And so I was kind of sad to, not kind, I was really sad to see him pass away. 83 is a pretty good life, though, I think.
Actually, Sammy Terry still exists because his son took over the role. We've been getting him 3 or 4 times a year, not like every Saturday night.
Only
but you
Halloween.
Seem like you're like way too young to remember Sammy Terry.
Yeah.
Because he was going out as I was very, very young, and yeah, you're like 10 years younger than me.
You know, I'm not really sure if it was, I know it wasn't in the prime.
Like, you see reruns?
It may have been reruns, I don't know. I was always told not to watch it, and I remember him. I remember the voice, I remember the whole thing, and I was like, hey, guy's not really creepy, but he's creepy.
That laugh.
The laugh
creeps
was,
you out.
Yeah.
So for people in the Midwest that might remember him, Sammy Terry passed away, scared the crap out of me when I was a kid. If you're not from the Midwest and you don't care, well, then we got more horror news for you. But if you are, look him up on YouTube. You can get his shows on YouTube. At least you can get his clips on YouTube. Sometimes you can get full shows. Tyler, have you seen this little movie I like to call Cabin in the Woods?
I have.
Have you heard of this little theme park I like to call Universal Studios Orlando?
Yeah, I think so.
Do you know what the two have in common?
Let me guess. Amusement park ride.
You're close.
Oh, okay.
Universal Studios Orlando has announced that they will be using Cabin in the Woods as an attraction for the 2013 Halloween Horror Nights.
I am kind of excited about that.
What's great is that you were so excited about it, you just gave me a blank stare for like 2 seconds.
Because I was thinking about...
You're like, I'm so excited, I'm making no motions for the next 2 seconds.
I had to think about what that was.
Well, from September through November is when Universal Studios has their Halloween Horror Nights. They're going to use Cabin in the Woods as a theme for one of their mazes.
Sweet.
They are actually completely building the cabin. And you're going into the cabin. You're going into the cube cells.
Now, that would be pretty cool.
I've actually never been to Universal Studios, but this would make me want to go, I think.
Yeah, I've never been either.
You get attacked by Merman.
I'm there. Let's do it.
We may need to take the Resurrection Zombie 7 podcast on the road and do a special live show from the Halloween Horror Nights. We'll have to totally lie about how many listeners we have. Just add a couple zeros on the end of the actual totals. Tyler, have you heard of this little movie I like to call House of Wax?
I have, unfortunately.
Unfortunately.
Okay, the remake.
No, I'm talking about the 1953 Vincent Price original House of Wax.
Okay. I've heard of it.
Have you seen it?
No.
We did this movie when we had the Zombie Reckoning podcast. We did this movie in the battle for Vincent Price.
Okay.
It was this versus Last Man on Earth.
Okay.
For the record, House of Wax won. But it was our closest battle of any one of the crazy eight shows that we did. It's a really good movie, though. I would highly recommend it for anyone who likes old school horror or likes Vincent Price. Obviously, well, if you like Vincent Price, you like old school horror. House of Wax. Warner Brothers is finally putting out a House of Wax Blu-ray. And I'm glad that you're here so you can explain this to me. They're putting it out on 3D Blu-ray. I should denote that when I first met Tyler, I had a word for him that I cannot use.
I'm surprised you haven't used it yet.
I can't use it on the podcast because now it's all offensive.
Ah, sure.
And like, obviously. I'll have to do a public apology and like it'll be picked up by Newsweek and then I'll have to go on the morning. It'll be a whole Paula Deen situation.
Oh yeah, we don't need that.
So I can't use the word, but you're much more technologically advanced than I am. So please explain to me what a 3D Blu-ray is.
Well, you know what? I'm not 100% sure what the difference between the 3D technologies are, but I know that you go to like Best Buy, H.H. Gregg, places like that. They have the 3D TVs. There are some with active 3D technology and some with passive. The 3D Blu-rays will work in either. I'm not really sure how it works, to be honest. I've seen...
Will we be able to see it in 3D?
Well, yeah.
Do you have to have the glasses?
Yes.
So you have to watch TV in your house with those stupid glasses on?
Yeah. Yeah, I actually have a friend who let me watch Life of Pi with him. And I had to say, it gave me a headache.
That's funny because if somebody said, you know a person who is watching 3D technology and wearing silly glasses while they watch movies in their own home, you would have been my first guess.
It's not that I don't want to watch
and a 3D. And three of my top five guesses.
Oh, wow. It's not that I don't want to watch a 3D movie. I just don't think it's going to be that big of a deal. Unless you don't have to wear the glasses, then it's something else. But
Just on TV or in the movies?
I wouldn't watch
it. I always thought 3D was a fad in the movies, but it's been like 10 years and it's not going away. So it's pissing me off.
I think movies would be better, a better format than TV. Because if you watched commercials in 3D, that's just stupid.
You know what I don't want to see in 3D?
What's that?
Ron Perlman. But
hey, man. Hellboy in 3D would be all right.
Hellboy, maybe.
Yeah.
Sons of Anarchy,
not
so much.
Nah.
And my last bit of horror news also involves Blu-ray technology. And it's purely, I know no one's going to care about this other than me, and people are going to give me shit about it, but I love these movies, so I'm going to say it's big news that the Tremors collection is finally getting announced on Blu-ray.
Finally.
Right now, only Tremors is available on Blu-ray, but now they're taking the entire Tremors Attack Pack, which is the four actually full-length movies, and putting them on Blu-ray. They will release on September 17th.
Do I hear a future?
With a bunch of bonus features that aren't on the other DVDs, so that makes me happy.
Do I hear a future Zombie 7 podcast series?
Oh, we'll be doing Tremors. Actually, this Psycho series would have been Tremors.
Oh, yeah?
Had Hammer not pulled power play as he was going out.
What would that be?
Basically, I said Tremors, Critters, or Psycho. And he didn't really care, and he let one of the listeners bully him into Psycho. What? And listener who did it, you know who you are. And Tremors is going to come up at some point, probably this calendar year, and you're just going to have to deal with it.
Everybody needs some Tremors.
And you know what? I'm going to make her be the special guest host on those.
Oh, there it is. Called her out.
Yeah. Oh, she knows who she is. Anyway, but I'm excited about that, even though I don't have a Blu-ray player. And I already have all the movies.
Why don't you have a Blu-ray player?
Because I'm technologically retarded.
They're like $30 at Walmart now.
How long have you known me?
Well,
how long have I been behind the curve?
5 years now, right? 4 years?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
How long have I been behind the technological curve?
Well, I see the Super Nintendo there. So
I still play the Super Nintendo.
I would too.
But in my defense, I also have an Xbox 360.
I see it, yeah.
And a Roku.
Yeah.
Which was totally...
I'm not judging you or anything. I'm just saying. $30.
Well, I only have a Roku because you spent more on Hammer this. Gave it to me.
Oh. The truth comes out.
That was... No, we did it on air in our Christmas episode.
Oh, whoops.
Thanks for listening, Tyler.
Yeah, I didn't hear that one.
Anyway, that is horror news for this week. A lot of Blu-ray, a lot of 3D Blu-ray, and some local news to go in there as well. Let's move on to Psycho 3 Almost, because I want to remember to announce that we're still having a contest for one of the listeners to pick the next movie that we do a review of for the next One Night Stand podcast. Unfortunately, by you participating in this podcast, that makes you eligible for the contest.
I am eligible?
You're ineligible.
Oh, no.
You're ineligible. Unless nobody else does it, then... I might make you do it.
I'm the tiebreaker then, right?
And be like, oh, Tyler won. No, the contest is to write a review on our new podcast feed, which you can get to through our website, zombie7.com. Just go to the iTunes up there. You're going to want to subscribe to the new podcast feed anyway, because the old podcast feed is going away. It's got like 3 weeks left. You won't be able to get new shows on it, so it'll take you less than 30 seconds to go to the website, zombie7.com, hit on the iTunes button there, hit subscribe, give us 5 stars, write a review telling everyone how great we are, and your name's thrown in the hat to pick the next movie that we do for our One Night Stand podcast. Now, I know some people have had problems. They've been trying to leave reviews, and they haven't been showing up. I left a review just to test it.
Does that one count?
I mean, I'll pick the One Night Stand the One Night Stand movie. No, I left a review just to test it. It took about 24 hours, but it popped up there. So I know that the system works. If you're having problems with it, just give us a text message. I'll still give you credit, probably. And if you're lying to me, I mean, really, how am I going to know? So anyway, do that. Go to the website to switch your feeds before the Podomatic feed ends. And now I'm ready to go back to Fairvale? I have 3 episodes now. I haven't been able to say that stupid name of that town. To revisit Norman Bates and his misadventures at the Bates Motel. Tyler, have you seen this little movie I like to call Psycho 3?
You know, I think I have.
He's totally not reading off a script, ladies and gentlemen. After Psycho 2 came out and it was a moderate success, it made, you know, 2-3 times its budget. Somebody said, you know what, we can still make some money off of this. Slasher films, it's the mid-80s, slasher films are still really big. We haven't played out Norman Bates yet like we played out the other 80s horror killers. So let's bring back Anthony Perkins and let's have another Psycho movie. So 1986, the Psycho movie was released in America. Psycho 3 released on July 2nd, 1986. Have you ever heard of this director?
No, not before this movie. I didn't.
You didn't know this director before this movie?
No.
This director is Anthony Perkins. The guy who plays Norman Bates.
I just saw that day. Director is Anthony Bates. Yeah, I think I've heard of him. You can edit that out.
This
right?
is what I... Oh, no, I'm not editing it out. That's staying in.
Dang it.
This is what I was saying when we did the Nightmare on Elm Street movies. No one's going to know the character that the movie's built around more than the guy who's played the character in all the movies. This is why I always thought Robert Englund should have got shot directing one of the Nightmare on Elm Street movies.
Yeah, but have you seen any of the movies that Robert Englund has directed?
Like 876 Evil?
Yeah, they're all pretty bad.
Not as bad as Nightmare on Elm Street 5 and 6 were, though.
Okay.
It couldn't hurt, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. I think you're right on. I mean, he would have done better directing not every one of them, but he would have been better at 5 and 6 for sure.
Yeah, I don't think he'd have made it worse.
No.
But that was a discussion for a movie franchise that we've already done. So in the Psycho franchise, they actually did give the reins over to Anthony Perkins for this third installment. Mr. Hilton Green, who worked under Alfred Hitchcock, comes back to produce again, which I like. I think that gives the movies a little bit of legitimacy, and I also think that him and Anthony Perkins are both going to be the kind of people who are going to protect the Psycho legacy and not just hoard out for some quick money. So I like them being involved with the franchise. The guy who wrote the movie, his name is Charles Edward Pogue. Just so you guys know, there is a bug that keeps jumping on my screen. Like, I keep trying to get it, and it keeps jumping to another area. So if you hear, keep hearing clicks, it's me punching at my screen to try to kill this bug.
I was wondering what you were doing over there.
Oh, because I could say this week, thanks to Tyler, we have the A to A USB cord problem under control. If the show sounds much better this week, send us an email thanking Tyler because he fixed the problem.
Thank my place of employment for allowing me to spend 15 minutes making a cable.
Did they allow you to, or did you just do it?
No one knew. They wouldn't care anyway.
Anyway, so at the end of Psycho 2, we had a little bit of a twist where we find out that Norma Bates is not actually Norman Bates' biological mother. His biological mother was the lady Emma Spool, who came in at the end of the movie, told Norman Bates that she gave him to her sister because she went into a mental institution, which makes a lot of sense. This Emma Spool person basically killed everyone in the movie Psycho 2. But we all know Norman has mother issues. So within 5 minutes of meeting his real mom, he killed her. And that set up basically Psycho 3, where we have Anthony Perkins not only directing but returning as Norman Bates, because I don't know that anyone else can play this role, except for maybe Christopher Walken. Well, we know for sure Vince Vaughn can't do it.
That's for sure.
Also, coming back for this particular movie is Hugh Gillen. I guess that's the guy's name, as the sheriff, the same guy from Psycho 2. In this movie, not to get too far ahead, but in this movie, just like in the last movie, for some reason, the cops and the people in Fairvale think that Norman Bates can do no wrong.
I think that goes back to a conversation.
Which is just weird.
Conversation that you and Hammer had. I don't remember which movies you guys were talking about, but you made the argument that all law enforcement is incompetent in movies.
Oh, that started with Scream, and it continued through every single horror movie franchise we've ever done. And it continues in this one.
The fifth line of my notes is incompetent law enforcement.
Which is funny, because in the second movie, the sheriff, who is incompetent and believes that Norman Bates can do no wrong, even though he was convicted of killing people and spent 20 years in a mental asylum, in the second movie, he actually has a line where he says, "I'm not inept, maybe just a little slow." So take that for what you will. That guy returns, the staff of the diner that Norman Bates worked in. Psycho 2, all return. I mean, they don't have really large, stupid bug. They don't. Oh, I got him.
Ooh, got him.
I let him live.
That's a humanitarian thing to do.
Usually, if they're in my house, I kill them. But I let him live because it was live on the show. Well, not live, but it was recorded on the show. Where was I at?
I don't know. I was worried about you getting that bug.
So was I. Oh. Yeah, all the diner crew returns, but they don't play a large role. At the beginning of this movie, Norman Bates is still living at the Bates Motel, obviously, because he was exonerated from anything that happened in the second movie. So he doesn't have to break out of an insane asylum. He doesn't have to be admitted that he's not crazy by a judge or anything like that. Even though he did kill his mom, and she's now sitting upstairs in Mother's room, dead. But unlike the second film, more like the first film, this movie actually starts off with a different character that's not Norman Bates. So let me ask you this, Tyler, because it's probably been a while since you saw the original Psycho.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like everybody sees it when they're a teenager, then they completely forget about it. Were you surprised that the first, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes of this did not contain any Norman Bates?
Not really. I mean, not really surprised, because I don't really remember all of the first movie, but...
Well, in the first movie, Norman Bates doesn't show up in the movie for a half an hour.
Yeah.
Alfred Hitchcock is a good director and spends the first half an hour building up the victim.
Yeah.
So that you actually care when she dies. And like I said on the Psycho podcast, it's a pretty ballsy move to get your audience completely devoted to this character and then kill her off.
Yeah.
But it works because of Anthony Perkins' performance as Norman Bates. In this movie, we don't have Marion Crane, but we have Maureen Coyle, which by not a coincidence is the same initials as Marion Crane. And Maureen Coyle is a nun who is in the process of losing her religion.
It's a good way to put it. The very, very beginning of this movie, she screams, "There is no God."
That's the very first thing you hear. Before the screen's still black.
Yeah, I think so. Well, I mean, there's some stuff going on, I think. Maybe.
I think you can hear other stuff going on.
But then the first thing you see after she screams there is no God, you know what she's doing? She's praying. She's proclaiming there is no God, and then she goes and she prays. But who she... I was a little bit confused.
See, when I first saw this movie and it starts like that, I was like, oh, here we go. We got to add religion.
Yeah.
We're into the Psycho franchise where it really has no place. I mean, there are some franchises like the Exorcist franchise,
sure,
like the Prophecy franchise, where religion is the focal point.
Sure.
So you're going to concentrate on that. But in slasher movies, yeah, not so much, unless there's a victim praying, you know.
Yeah.
To whatever God that particular victim believes in. I don't think that Maureen is recanting her religion. I think that there is no God was more for shock value. I think that she was doubting.
Yeah, but...
Is she doubting her religion or is she doubting her lifestyle? Like, maybe she's like, oh, I'm going to be a nun, but I really like to have sex, so maybe I shouldn't be a nun.
I mean...
And I like to eat candy bars. Did nuns eat candy bars?
Probably.
Weren't you a nun at one point?
I thought about it. They wouldn't let me in, though.
I said, you read too many comic books.
Yeah. So, no, but I don't understand why. I mean, I get the screaming, there is no God, because that fits in line with her leaving the nunnery, which is a word.
Get thee to the nunnery.
Sure.
Yeah.
But then why put her in praying? I mean, this doesn't, I don't understand the reason why that needed to be in there, but whatever.
Well, not only was she praying, but I think she was about to commit suicide.
And, yeah, that too.
Which, that's like one of the most unforgivable sins, yeah. Am I not
I correct? I think that's said somewhere, yeah.
But instead of committing suicide, she instead pushes one of the other nuns to her death.
Accidentally.
I mean, your accident, my not so much accident.
She technically gets kicked out of the nunnery then, because murder is kind of frowned upon.
Which works out for her anyway.
Yeah, it works.
So she's on the run, just like Marion Crane in the first movie was on the run.
Did you have a problem with the fact that she's walking through the middle of the desert?
Like the nunnery is in the middle of a desert somewhere?
Yeah. So there's no road to get to the nunnery. So she has to, like, hoof it through the desert to find a road.
I mean, I didn't have a problem with that because any girl of any kind in a horror movie that is running away is always walking through the desert. Like, they can never find a city. Even if they're in a city, like if the girl's, like, in New York City and her boyfriend kicks her out and she has no place to go and she has to go somehow end up finding the killer, she'll be in a desert within, like, 5 minutes.
Yeah.
But while she's in the desert, she gets picked up by a guy called Dwayne Duke, who goes by Duke, played by the great Jeff Fahey. I said the great Jeff Fahey, but he's a pretty solid character actor. He's been in a lot of stuff.
He looks exactly the same now as he did then.
You think? No, he's got a long white beard now.
He's got a little bit of a beard, yeah. So when I saw him in Lost, when I recognized him.
Oh, yeah, he's the... I don't watch Lost. I never watched Lost, but apparently he was the pilot.
He's a pilot in season 6. Yeah.
Oh, when you say he's a pilot, I thought maybe he was the pilot the pilot episode and died in the plane crash.
No. Yeah, he was an airplane pilot season 6. His plane goes down on the island.
Oh, so was he a regular cast member after that, for that season?
Season 6, he's in pretty much the whole season, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Listeners probably know him from Lost, then. So I'm assuming that the Lost viewership and the Resurrection of Zombie 7 podcast listenership have a pretty good crossroads there.
Hand in hand.
While this is going on, while Maureen gets picked up by Duke, he's going to give her a ride.
You should have killed that thing when you had the chance.
Is it still flying around?
It's like right here in my business.
If I catch it again, I'll take it outside or something. Duke pulls the car over because they're both getting tired. It's pouring down rain. It's time for a little nappy nap, or so Maureen thinks. Duke is using the opportunity to basically fill her up and uses a flashlight to look up her...
A flashlight.
Skirt. Was it a flashlight?
Yeah.
That's what I thought. If what would be even better, today he would actually have a cell phone.
Yeah.
With a flashlight app. He could take pictures. So, yeah, so it would all work out for him better. I was going to ask you, have you ever slept in a rainstorm in a car?
Probably.
When you were homeless for 2 years?
Yeah. No, I did go camping one time and it rained and we couldn't figure out how to get the tent up, so we slept in the car.
Okay, that's fair enough. So this leads to Duke kicking Maureen out. Now she's walking in the middle of a desert in the middle of a thunderstorm.
And the best line, maybe the best line in the whole movie.
I know what line you're talking about.
When he kicks her out of the car.
Yeah.
You could have been coming instead of going.
Exactly. Duke, the Duke here, he's full of great like one-lines through the whole movie. Meanwhile, while this is going on, a reporter by the name of Tracy is looking for Norman Bates. So she shows up at the diner that he used to work at, where the inept police of this city are also questioning various diner employees about Emma Spool, because that's where she worked. She passed away at the end of the last film.
Passed away, that's a nice way to put it.
She got nailed with a shovel. Which makes me think that this, the events of this movie happened fairly shortly after the events of that movie. I mean, if you go by the years, I mean, obviously, it's the film happens for... The actual film comes out 4 years later, but 4 years has not passed here. I'm thinking maybe 4 weeks, maybe not even that.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I question that, too, when we get to the end of the movie. I don't want to go too far ahead, but the body of the mother is much more decomposed than 4 weeks. But but yeah, I
got... Well, he sits around in the sun every day.
It must have been. She's pretty leathery.
And he also... filled her insides
up. Dusty.
Yeah. So, but Tracy is basically, she's a reporter who is hounding Norman at every step, calling him a killer. Did you think that at some point Tracy was going to be revealed as not being a reporter?
No.
Because in the second movie, when Norman befriends a young lady, and he brings her into his home because she has no place to go, it ends up being that she was the niece of the original person who was killed at the Bates Motel, and she was messing with Norman, mm-hmm. trying to get him to go crazy again, which she succeeded in.
Yeah. Now, had I watched these movies in order, I probably would have suspected that.
At this point, Duke shows up at the Bates Motel. Norman hires him on as the assistant manager to the hotel.
Oh, wait, can we go back a second? So back in the diner, I don't know if you noticed this, but in the diner, Norman goes in, right?
I was going back to the diner.
Oh, sorry.
But go ahead.
When he walks out, there's a poster on the wall that says, "Have you seen this lady?" with a picture of
Emma. Yeah.
It looks like my 2-year-old made it. I mean, it's like crayon. It's like, if you want somebody to find this woman, use a marker at least. I mean, come on.
Maybe one of the waitresses that worked there had her daughter draw the sign.
It's heartfelt.
This is what you should do, Tyler. You should have your 2-year-old draw a sign and then take a picture of it, and we'll put it up on the Facebook page.
Hey, we'll do it. I got plenty of artwork.
I'm sure you do. Your refrigerator's full. But no, I was just going to say Norman hires on Duke as his assistant manager.
For $5 an hour.
Hey, that was some money back in the day, yeah. Back in 1986. This is how old I am. You're going to be amazed at this. When I first started working... My very first job, minimum wage was $3.85 an hour.
Whoa. What were you doing?
I was a cashier at Popeye's Chicken.
Nice.
Because my mom was a store manager. I was 14.
That's some bucks.
Yeah, $3.85. And I spent my entire first paycheck on Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle action figures. Because it was like $50.
Wow.
My check was, not the action figures.
Yeah, yeah.
So Norman leaves, Duke in charge, goes up to the restaurant to get some food and get Duke some food or whatever. This is where he sees Maureen for the first time and totally flips out. And if you guys haven't seen this movie, Maureen basically looks like Anne Heche. Mm-hmm. So if you've seen the remake of Psycho, that's what Maureen looks like. But don't see the remake of Psycho. If you haven't seen the remake of Psycho, you're a better person than I am, as long as you don't see it. So Norman freaks out because she has the same initials. She has very similar facial features or whatever. He even has like a daydream where he kind of kills her, mm-hmm. because he's Norman and he's fucking crazy.
His daydream is just the blood going down the drain, right? That's the...
They kind of replay the shower scene over and they intermittent with pictures of Maureen, mm-hmm. where it ends up, instead of Janet Lee falling out of the shower, it's Maureen. Diana Scarwid, the lady who plays Maureen. So Norman's all flipped out, and to make matters worse, Maureen shows up at the motel, looking for a room. Because this is what happens. If you're anywhere within 10 miles of Norman Bates, and you're a female in distress, it's like a beacon. You have to go to him to be killed, ultimately. Let me tell you this, Norman Bates may be crazy, and he may be weird, But the, throughout the entire Psycho series, he gets play.
He does.
There's, I've said this the first two podcasts, and I'll probably say it again next week. But this guy always has women around him.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he does better than me sometimes. I'm a bartender. I have alcohol. So, yeah, Maureen checks in. She's not very happy that Duke is there since he, you know, basically, I think, attempted rape is a little too far. I don't think he went that far, but definitely was very sleazy with her and, you know, kicked her out of his car in the middle of a rainstorm.
Stand-up guy.
So Norman is all his usual awkward self around Maureen. Duke gives her room number one, which makes Norman freak out, because I don't think on the second movie, when Norman was incarcerated, the base motel was being used as an adult motel. You could rent a room by the hour. So I'm sure that cabin one was rented out several times during that time period, but I don't think from the way Norman reacts to cabin one being rented out, I don't think that he's actually rented out cabin one since Marion Crane. I don't think he himself has. So Norman flips out because he knows he's a perf, and he knows that this woman's going to take a shower, and he knows that even though he doesn't want to, that he can't control himself, and he's going to look through the people. And he looks through the people. And then we get our obligatory boob shot for a 1980s slasher movie.
Yeah.
And not so obligatory like butt shot that was lingering.
Yeah.
Lingering butt shot.
I noticed that too.
Well, you can't not notice it. It's on the whole
it's
screen.
It's the screen.
And Norman knows that now that he's seen her naked, mother's going to want to kill her. And on cue, as she sits in the bathtub, mother comes in to get rid of the nasty woman who's trying to seduce her innocent son. But there's a catch here.
What's the catch?
The catch is this woman is not just bathing. She is in the process of committing suicide.
Ah.
Again. And she fails. Again.
Yeah.
Even though she raises her hands up and like blood, crazy blood spurts out of her arms. And I think there was more blood in this scene than there was in the first two movies combined.
Yeah.
Which just goes to show you that as you get further in the 80s, the death scenes have to get more bloody to keep the audience's attention, and you have to have your butt shots more lingering.
Very lingering.
So this formerly religious lady looks up and sees a nun, basically, because she's close to death. But really, it's just Mother, and Norman saves her life by taking her to the hospital.
I think you just spoiled the movie.
Okay, well, this movie is 30 years old, so if you haven't seen it yet, and seriously, this is our 51st episode of the Resurrection of Zombie 7 podcast, so if you don't know by now that we're going to spoil every movie that we've done, then you'd pay more attention. So while Norman is saving this girl's life, the evil reporter lady is hooking up with Duke, and I don't mean hooking up by like hooking up, but using him for information, because she for some reason has this vendetta against Norman Bates, while Duke is just trying really to get some play. He doesn't get it from the reporter lady. This lady, as a reporter, she's not doing a very good job. She's not endearing herself to very many people, because all she does is give snappy one-liner comebacks. And I wrote down in my notes, I didn't even have a lot of notes this week, but I wrote down in my notes, no one would talk to a police officer that way, no matter how inept they were.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, small town, so you never really know.
So you're going to go to, I mean, I live in a small town, and cops pull me over all the time, and I never talk to them that way. I'm guessing my town is smaller than Fairville. but Duke does eventually get some play, brings the girl back to the hotel, you know, has a one-night stand with her.
It's the weirdest. Well, okay, so she comes out to get ice, right?
Right.
The girl that he's getting ready to bang, right?
Yeah, yeah.
She's getting ice. So I wrote down, why, you know, they're getting ready to have sex.
Yep.
And then she leaves and goes to get ice?
After what we see later, it's not unthinkable to sure. think that maybe the ice is going to come into play.
Sure. I mean, at first, I wrote this down as the movie was going. So I had to
ask. She had to get ice so she could meet Norman Bates, so Norman knows that she's there.
And I also wrote down the lyrics to a song.
Did you write a song about Psycho 3?
No. The Lonely Island wrote a song.
About Psycho 3?
No, it had nothing to do with Psycho 3. But it's not gay. If
somebody good. Needs to write a song about Psycho 3. That's all I'm saying.
Hey, Robert Englund, he might do it, right?
Does he write songs?
Yeah, didn't he write a rap album?
No, he was in a rap album.
He was
album.
In a rap album?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, okay, whatever.
Not anyway. Robert Englund. Freddy Krueger, okay?
Sorry, Freddy.
Yeah.
So I wrote down, it's not gay if it's in a three-way. You have to look it up later.
No, I know that song. That's was an SNL.
Yeah, Lonely Island is the band. But yeah, they did on SNL with Lady Gaga.
That's where I saw it. Yeah, yeah. Remind me, I'll post that on the Facebook page this week after the show. But no, basically, yeah, so Norman would know that she was there. That's why she had the guys.
Yeah.
But I don't know if this is prying too much of this. You don't have to answer the question.
I know what you're going to ask.
Do you?
Something to do with lampshades?
Yes.
Let me tell you a story. No. There have never been lampshades involved in foreplay.
Okay, fair enough.
Where I'm from, that's kind of weird. Lampshades are a common part of Bloomington life. Especially when there's alcohol involved. Lampshades, they happen.
But not as foreplay.
Never as foreplay.
But after seeing this movie, maybe?
I don't know. He had a cool cross thing going on.
I mean, she was in the spotlight.
She was.
Okay, well, did you watch this movie with your wife?
No, this one I did not. No. I was house-sitting for my mother-in-law. So I was like, I'm alone watching this movie and feeling really weird.
That could be beneficial or detrimental. It could be beneficial in that when you break out the lampshades, your wife could be like, whoa, Tyler.
Something's going on.
What's going on? Are you ready for baby number three?
Or
detrimentally, having not seen the movie and not getting the joke,
she
could be like, what are you doing, freak? You need to sleep on the couch for the next 2 weeks.
So, we have one of those.
Yeah.
I think it can make it work.
One of my stand-up?
Yeah, something like that.
That used to stand up straight until about a month ago. No, about 3 weeks ago, when Morty's cousin got pulled over for drunk driving, and he got all pissed, and he likes to try to break stuff. So he didn't quite break it.
He tried.
But it's in bad shape.
You should get Morty to pay for that.
Well, Morty pays most of the bills because he has two jobs, so I really have not a lot to say. I just, my job basically is to keep him out of jail and out of the hospital, which I did not do very well this week. But he's fine. For people who are wondering, Morty's going to make it. He just has some stitches in his hand. He's fine.
Yeah, he's all right. So,
because, I mean, be honest, Morty's creepy.
He is creepy. Okay, back to the movie here. I want to ask you, how long has Duke been living at the Bates Motel? Because by the scene, it looks like he's been there for about 3 years. The room is all destroyed. He's got porn posters on the wall.
And he was there for maybe 3 days?
Maybe 3 days.
Well, he didn't have the internet back then.
This is true.
Because I can tell you this. If I stayed in the motel, it would take me way less than 3 days to start looking at porn on my computer. Maybe not even 3 hours, depending upon what my schedule was. I think that if he had had internet porn,
he wouldn't have needed to plaster the walls.
There would be no porn all over the walls.
Yeah.
He may not even have went out and got the girl from the bar. He might have been too busy. Because this girl he picks up from the bar, basically, he's basically what you think he is. A douchebag.
Yeah.
And he basically kicks her out after one night stand. Because after he bangs her, he doesn't want anything to do with her.
Yeah, why is he so angry after sex? He's like the angriest person. I mean, what was that all about?
Some people get that way after sex.
I guess, man. I don't know. Maybe he didn't pay for it, so... Or maybe he did.
Bought her a beer.
Well,
she said, don't make it cheap. He said, it is cheap. I bought you one beer, and then you came back with me. And then you gave her $5 for a cab. He kicks her out. Basically, she's trying to call a cab. Feels the need to take off her shirt in the middle of the phone booth.
Yeah, I wrote that down. This never happens in real life. If it did.
Well, in real life, there are no more phone booths.
Well, okay, but when there were. It's like some Superman action.
I used many phone booths back in my day.
Yeah.
And I never saw brass in one.
Yeah.
Unless it was drawn on the side of the phone booth or something. But getting naked anywhere in the vicinity of the Bates Motel means mother's going to find you and kill you for being a pornographer.
I really thought this through. Okay, what was the reason for the shirt off? So if it was on inside out, because she left in a hurry.
Yeah.
Why not just leave it?
I thought that was on inside out. That's probably why she took it off.
But why not just leave it?
Well, obviously she has no qualms about showing her boobies.
That's for sure. Let's get to the bottom.
Well, because the cab probably isn't going to pick her up if she's naked.
Okay. You're onto something.
So mother kills her because she's half naked. Because that's what happens. A lot of blood in that scene, too. Norman, who's been taking care of cleaning up after mother his whole life, basically, discovers the body, decides that he needs to get rid of the body, and the only proper way to get rid of the body is obviously bury it in the ice machine, the brand new ice machine in the motel.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I would do probably. I wouldn't go put her in the desert, you know. There's
or would you put her
miles of nothing. I'd put her in the ice chest.
And to his credit, in this part of the film anyway, he can't really put her in a car and put her in a swamp because that's kind of his thing.
Yeah.
People would figure it out.
Yeah.
You would think. But I imagine I have this like vision in my head because, you know, the base motel never makes a lot of money because it's the main highway doesn't go there anymore.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
But I have this idea in my head of like I see in like magazines or today, let's go by today, on TripAdvisor or on an internet website, I see like the base motel and like their big advertisement is, we have a new ice machine.
Shiny new ice machine.
Yeah. State of the art, brand new ice machine.
Yes.
The problem with the body being in the ice machine is that Norman has booked the biggest group of people ever at the base motel, where he sold four cabins to people who are coming in for some sort of high school football game. So while these people are partying and...
That cracked me up, by the way, when they're getting out of the car, when, from the hospital, they're getting there.
Yeah.
And the big fat dude, like, busting the window. I can't remember what he says, but it just made me laugh.
No, he told Norman how they were going to beat, him.
Yeah, yeah.
And not beat him, like, physically beat Norman, but beat the high school, the local high school.
Yeah, that just made me
laugh.
And
Norman was just like, whatever, dude. Because that scene reminded me of it. Anthony Perkins, again, for the third time in a row, is perfect in the role of Norman Bates. Just, like, his little twitches and his just being nervous all the time. It's the way his speech pattern, I mean, that's Norman Bates.
Yeah.
Just like with Robert Englund and Freddy Krueger, sometimes you forget how good the actor is behind the character because the character is so ingrained into your mind.
Have you seen any other movies with Anthony Perkins? Is that just him?
I have seen that movie with Anthony Perkins. It was...
Murder on the Orient Express?
Yes, that's the one I've seen.
Yeah.
And no, that's not him. He's a good actor.
So that's impressive.
Because this is what I learned about Anthony Perkins with the Psycho series. He takes the role of Norman Bates very, very seriously. Mm-hmm. And he's the expert on the character, and he knows he's the expert on the character, and he will let you know that he's the expert on the character. He wasn't the easiest guy to deal with, but he did it. I mean, I won't say he was a prick or anything, because I don't think that was the case, but he was hard to work with because he wanted to protect the legacy of Psycho, and he didn't want to make a shitty movie just for money. So I can respect that, because Norman Bates is a ladies' man. Maureen kind of falls for him. They go out on a date. Where Norman actually drinks some alcohol, which is odd, because he's a super clean-cut guy, and I can't see him doing anything bad other than murdering people.
Alcohol is kind of low on the list when you're a murderer.
But. Yeah, I mean, he's very neat, doesn't smoke, probably doesn't do drugs. Well, I know he doesn't do drugs.
Yeah.
But, you know, then he murders people. I don't think he murders children, unless you count teenagers. Does that count as children? He doesn't murder small children.
They probably couldn't show murdering children at that time, so they probably still can't. Have you ever seen a child die on screen?
Yes.
Murdered?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
What movie?
I can't remember, but I know that I did because I was surprised by it because I always thought you had to do it off screen.
Well, the closest I've ever seen was The Walking Dead. I think it was the last season. The girl is a zombie. The little girl, they find her in the... Have you seen it?
No, but I think that if it's a zombie,
it's different.
It's kind of different.
She wasn't a little girl either. She had to have been like 12.
One of the ones that shocked me pretty, a while back, but one of the ones that shocked me a kid dying was in the movie Sleepy Hollow.
The Johnny Depp Sleepy Hollow?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because the Headless Horseman kills a whole family, and he kills everything except for the kids underneath, like he crawls underneath the house or whatever. Like you see a silhouette of the Headless Horseman like killing the kid, and it's obvious that he took this little kid's head. But I think nowadays... You can do that.
You still can't kill kids in video games.
Oh, yeah? You can't?
Yeah. You ever heard of the game Fallout 3?
No. What about Grand Theft Auto?
No, there's no kids. There are no kids in
Are there no kids
all.
In those games?
Uh-uh.
I'm trying to think.
No, lots of old people, but no kids. No, the Fallout 3 had kids running around because it's kind of a post-apocalyptic.
Is the game like Grand Theft Auto where you can usually kill anything you
want? Yeah, yeah. And then you can go anywhere, do whatever you want to. But you could. There's one part in the game where you could kill a kid, but they would immediately come back to life. Or they wouldn't die then.
I think you can kill kids in Skyrim.
Yeah, I've never tried. I don't know.
I've punched kids in Skyrim.
Well, sure. And shoot them in the knee with an arrow.
I didn't shoot him in the knee with an arrow.
You get the joke?
Yes.
Okay.
For anyone who doesn't get the joke, you can email us. We'll give us some emails.
So we're back to the...
But do teenagers count as kids? Because they get killed all the time.
Yeah, no, I think teenagers are a fair game.
Well, they have to be.
Obviously.
So Maureen and Norman sort of have a little date, and it gets to the point where Norman even gets a little makeout session with Maureen, and then for some reason, because he's Norman Bates, freaks out and leaves her passed out on her bed with her door wide open and just leaves. Has an argument with his mom because his mom thinks that Maureen's a slut.
Yep.
Which, you know, hey, first date, she was going to go all the way. I can't really argue with mother.
You got a point.
I mean, this is a chick who was going to be a nun a week ago.
But the timeline's still kind of confusing here. You don't know how much time went from her checking in. It's supposed to be like a day.
I'm saying like a week.
Yeah, but, I mean, Duke's obviously been there for a while.
Let me tell you this. Any men listening to the show, you probably don't get very many dates if you're listening to our show. So you can take some, like, dating tips from Norman Bates, because he knows how to woo the women.
He does.
Like, he takes Maureen out to a nice place. It's a fancy restaurant. He had all of her clothes cleaned, dry cleaned while she was in the hospital. Then he respectfully doesn't sleep with her on the first date because he knows that's going to make her want it more.
He's got to figure it out.
Saves her from suicide.
Yeah.
Basically, what this movie tells me is if you save a girl from dying, she has to sleep with you.
I'd agree with that, I think. Yeah. Have you ever saved a girl? I saved a life other than a small baby.
My main thing is saving babies.
Yeah. So you won't know until a good 20, 30 years, right?
Right.
If they reciprocate.
I didn't even know if the baby was a boy or a girl.
Oh, doesn't matter, right?
In 30 years, it won't. Yeah. In 30 years, I'll be so old, I'll just be like, hey, can you just change my diaper? That's what gets me off of these days. This is kind of weird. But during the party, one of the partygoers has to find a bathroom. And instead of any of the 12 cabins that are available, she decides to use the one in the office. Mm-hmm. Which, another theme of this movie, why I've learned from this movie, is if you use the office toilet in the basement hotel, you will get killed. Because through four movies, she's the only person that uses it, and she gets killed.
So, doesn't he say there's a parlor in the back? That's the next movie. He says there's a parlor. What's a parlor?
No, there's been a parlor in the back since the first movie.
Yeah.
A parlor's like a sitting room.
Oh, okay.
I was thinking like a bar or something. A smoking room back in the day. Some parlors have bars.
Okay.
So, it'd be like a sitting room, a lounge.
And a toilet.
Something like that. And, you know, a toilet. Bloody toilet. In each one of these death scenes that we have in this movie, there are more blood in each individual death scene than there was in the first two movies. Which is kind of disappointing because, like, I just feel like that was a crutch at the time. The very next day, the inept cops actually do show up because they're actually looking for the girl who disappeared, Red, who's buried in the ice cooler, all at the provoking of the reporter because the reporter's a total bitch. Mm-hmm. And did you write that the cops were inept after the scene or before the scene?
Definitely before.
Well, this has proved your point. Because there's a dead body in the cooler. Some of the ice in the cooler is bloody.
Yeah.
He opens the cooler. For some reason, out of the like seven people standing around the cooler, only Norman can see the body that's obviously hanging out of the cooler.
Yeah, and he's kind of puckered there, too, when he sees it.
Kind of puckered.
He's like, don't do it.
Oh. Yeah, the sheriff is randomly eating ice out of the cooler without looking at the ice that he's grabbing because he grabs a handful of bloody ice and pops it in his mouth.
But, I mean, to be fair, would you look into the cooler while you're eating ice? I mean, you're talking, you're having a conversation, you just kind of reach out and grab some ice.
I've worked at enough restaurants and seen enough ice bins. I will always look in the cooler to see what's on the ice.
Okay. Nice.
And just as a tip for those of you who have never worked in restaurants, you should too. This cop is busy defending Norman and eating bloody ice to actually do his job and find it. And here's another thing. The one girl on the toilet died and like no one in her party like noticed.
Yeah, I noticed that.
Like if I have a party and there's like eight people there and somebody doesn't ever come back from the bathroom.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll figure it out after a while. Yeah, sure. It might take me a minute.
It's almost like during the almost sex scene, they're really loud and obnoxious, but literally as soon as that scene is over with, everybody just leaves. Like, all right, see ya. Party's over.
Let me tell you this. A couple weeks ago, we had a cookout for our my bowling team. Mm-hmm. So I had the same situation. We were all, you know, intoxicated and rowdy out in my backyard. One of the party goers went missing for like 30 minutes. And I noticed, I was like, hey, where is this guy? Somebody go check and make sure he's not dead somewhere. Those are my exact words. So I would think that these people...
Well, this is the 80s, though.
If they did this, they would have found a dead person on a toilet. When we did this, we found a person literally passed out, ass up on the couch. Face on the couch, knees on the floor, ass in the air. True story.
Nice. Things were different in the 80s, though.
People just like, she's probably dead. There were so many slasher films like, she's probably dead. Okay, so at this point, we know that the police are kind of on Norman a little bit just because of this lady, but Duke knows that the police could really be on Norman because Duke has a little secret. He's discovered Mother.
Mm-hmm.
And he has her held hostage in his porno room. And he demands a large sum of money from Norman in exchange for Mother.
Do you remember what the sum of money was?
The sum of money was...
Did he say?
I don't remember if he
said.
I want
to say it's like $8,000 or something like that. Is that right?
That's probably right. Like in the 80s, $8,000 was a lot more than it is today. Yeah. And this guy, okay, he's not very smart.
Yeah.
But he's smart enough to know that Norman probably doesn't have much more than that.
Yeah.
Because look at his, I mean, his motel. Yeah. I mean, he's not going to be a guy that has a crap ton of money.
Yeah.
But here's what drives me crazy about this scene. Norman and Duke get into a fight. And for a while, Duke has the upper hand because he's younger, he's stronger. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, he's going to sneak up on Norman. But all of a sudden, Mama's pointing at Duke. So Norman knows that he's going to sneak up on him and turns around and beats the crap out of him with his guitar.
Yeah, and so he says, watch the guitar after he gets hit with it. Watch the guitar. If I'm getting hit in the back of the head with a guitar, the first thing I'm not going to be worried about is the guitar itself. I'm going to be more worried about my head.
Well, in Duke's defense, or the writer's defense, Duke also was more concerned with his guitar than a naked woman who was in his room.
It's true.
So he has a history of this.
Yeah, guitar was something for him, yeah.
But my thing is, do you think that Mother actually pointed, or did Norman just see that in his head?
The guitar?
No, no. Did you not see the scene?
She's pointing, yeah. I saw that, yeah.
Did she actually point, or was Norman just seeing that in his head?
I saw that she was pointing. I mean, that's why I...
Well, you saw this as a viewer.
Yeah, I know.
I'm asking you, what do you think the director was going for?
I think the director was...
Anthony Perkins.
I think he was trying to say that that Mother was actually pointing.
So now we have a supernatural zombie?
When I saw it, that's what I was thinking. I was like, oh my God, is she not dead? Like, what's going on here? Maybe something's going on. Something's fishy.
Speaking of fish, Norman takes... I don't know if you meant to do that transition. Norman decides, you know what? Hiding bodies in the ice cooler and leaving them in my parlor bathroom are just too risky. I got to go back to what I know. Let's put all these people in a car and... drive it into the swamp, because that's the last place that the sheriff is going to look, because he's inept.
Yeah.
And when he does, he'll be like, oh wow, these bodies in the swamp, nobody's done that since Norman Bates 20 years ago.
It's obviously not Norman again.
He's not stupid enough to do it again.
I wanted to ask this before and I missed my opportunity, but how did Duke know about mommy issues with Norman? How do you think he figured this out?
I think that Duke heard Norman arguing with his mom a lot in the house.
Mm.
Duke was left alone a lot at the hotel, and the house is very easy to break into because it gets constantly broken into all of the psycho films.
It's like there's not even a door.
So I don't think it was that hard.
I'm trying to put myself in Duke's shoes.
Duke's just smart enough to get himself in trouble.
If I was trying to get dirt on somebody, I probably wouldn't go digging through his mom's house. But
you also have to realize that Duke was put up to this by the reporter who was trying to get dirt on Norman.
Yeah.
Let me tell you this about Norman in the swamp, though. The whole theory that... Well, I'll do this again because they would never expect me to do it again, which wasn't the case. It's just his MO or whatever. When I was in high school, I got caught by the police with a topless girl in my car. And then, this is going to sound bad, kids. This was like at midnight in an elementary school parking lot. And the cop let us go. So like a week later, same girl, I'm thinking, if I go to the same spot, he's not going to catch us in the same spot again.
How'd that work out for you?
Yeah, exact same thing happened again.
Uh-huh.
It helped that the girl I was with was a police officer's daughter. So,
does that help you?
I guess it did. I mean, I don't know that he knew her or whatever, but...
Huh.
I know I haven't listened to last week's show yet, but last week I talked about my adventures at the Classic Motor Inn, which is a very, very dive motel in Indianapolis that rents to like 15 and 16 year olds. When the girls were like, I'm tired of getting caught at the elementary school parking lot, you get us a hotel room or it's not happening.
Nice.
So unfortunately for Norman, Duke's not quite dead when they try to get him in the swamp.
Norman puts Duke in the car.
Yeah.
I swear I saw him, Norman, kiss him. Did you see this?
No, there was the two girls were in the car, too.
No, but he kissed Duke.
Are you sure? I know he kissed, I thought he kissed one of the girls. Because Norman's he's a ladies' man, and he's a gentleman, and, you know, until he starts killing people. But he's also a giant perv, dude.
I know, but that's, I wrote this down after I watched it, so I could have been wrong, but I could have swore he kissed Duke.
Maybe he did. That,
we need to figure this out.
I thought he kissed one of the girls.
Okay, we'll say he kissed a girl, because that dead girls. Makes a lot more sense.
Now, if somebody's watching this, has this at home, and is watching this with the listeners, you can send us an email or something, explain it to us, or save it for the wrap-up show, and send us an email, explain it to us. So, after this, we enter Endgame, and Maureen gets in the house, because the house is not hard to break into. I believe she just walks through the front door, mm-hmm. actually. So, there you go. It's one of those deals where if you're trying to break into a house and the front door is unlocked, you'd be like, what?
Yeah.
Why do they want me to come into the house? No, but Maureen and Norman have a little moment or whatever. Unfortunately for Norman, he's distracted by Mother, who's shouting from the other room mm-hmm. because this bitch is a whore. Which, you know, like I said, not that far off. And unfortunately for him, this means that he knocks Maureen down the fatal stairs. Who's with the stairway that's killed at least one person in every movie so far. And not only does she fall off the stairs, she lands onto a statue, mm-hmm. which basically rips her skull open. So that's what happens when you make out with Norman Bates. Then after this, the reporter shows up. She sees Maureen's dead. She's like, Norman's obviously doing his thing again. This is the best story I'll ever have. I can make a shit ton of money. I'm not really secretly related to anybody that Norman's killed like everybody thought I was at the beginning of the movie. I am a reporter, but I do have some interesting information to give to the audience to justify my existence in this film. Do you know what the information was?
She go to the apartment, the old apartment, and she's looking around for something.
She goes to Emma Spool's apartment, yeah. The lady that Norman killed. That was actually Norman's real mom.
Yes. Yeah. She finds she finds a phone number, and she goes to the old folks' home. And the dudes, I remember.
She gets some clues. She goes to the old folks' home and talks to some people who used to know Emma, and she sets everything straight.
Yeah.
And then she tries to explain all this to Norman so that she won't die. The truth is, the lady who claims to have been Norman's real mother at the end of Psycho 2 was not actually Norman's real mother. Yeah. His mother, who was his dead mom at the beginning of Psycho 1, was actually his real mom. Emma Spool was infatuated with Norma's... Now, see if you can keep up with me. Emma Spool was infatuated with Norma's husband, who was Norman's dad, and tried to seduce him, but Norma's dad instead went with Norma, which drove Emma crazy, and she killed Norman's dad.
Mm-hmm.
And then she got caught and was institutionalized.
Yes.
And written out of Norman's life. Which, as confusing as this is, it's kind of brilliant.
Yeah, I mean, it makes an awesome storyline.
Because it makes sense with all three movies.
Yeah.
You can totally understand why Norman is batshit crazy in the head. It really cleans up any loose plot holes.
Yeah.
I think it's pretty cool. The mom that's dead in Mother's room, which... occasionally also sits up on her own.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, this is just Norman's head. Come on, man.
Maybe.
So Norman learns that that's not actually her mom. His mom. Just her. This is crazy aunt. This crazy aunt, posing as his mother, tries to get him to kill the reporter. And Norman's like, you know what? You're not my mom. You can't boss me around. You're just my stupid aunt. So instead, he takes a knife, and he basically chops the shit out of... Emma, again, she dies at the end of this film as well.
Yeah.
And dust goes flying. This is how we know she was dead. Dust goes flying everywhere. Her head comes off. There's nothing in there except for cardboard and dust.
Lots of dust.
Well, I mean, she's old.
Yeah, but...
The police, at this point, can't really deny mm-hmm. anything. They're like, oh, Norman, you made it so that we can't even act like you're not killing people.
We can't be inept this time.
I go, I can only eat so much bloody ice before the real cops find out. We got to take in. He's arrested. Somehow, at some point, he managed to steal the hand of Aunt Mother.
Yeah.
Mother Aunt?
Yeah. Going back to the inept cops.
But basically, that's just so Anthony Perkins can make his version of Dong Face that we see at the end of every movie.
If you're a police officer and you're putting a suspect into a car that has known to kill people, you wouldn't pat him down to see if he's carrying anything? I mean, especially in the pockets?
I'm guessing, we didn't see this. This is off screen when he got arrested.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing it went something like this. Come on, Norman, get in the car.
You know the drill.
And Norman, you know, he's a good guy. He's not going to fight. He's not going to be like, yeah, I didn't kill anybody.
That's a pretty big oversight, though.
So that's the end of Psycho 3. Do you have anything else you want to say about Psycho 3 before?
No, just the...
I mean, I know you took notes and everything.
I want to make sure
you get all your notes used up.
Yeah. No, okay, so the scene when you first see Norman in the wig and the... it's at the very end.
Yep.
The face that he has. I froze. I was watching...
Yeah, the dong face.
I watched this on my iPad, so yeah. I froze it there. And it creeped me out.
Yeah, that's a great face.
It creeped me out.
That's the same face he makes at the end of the original Psycho.
So I should go back and rewatch that movie after seeing this. But
what's amazing about that kind of thing is if you ever go back and rewatch Psycho 2, mm-hmm. because there's a point at the beginning where Norman is rehabilitated, but you can see as these ladies drive him crazy further into his own insanity, where he starts getting the tics back and he starts like briefly making that face and then going back to normal as he's becoming more and more insane.
Yeah.
It's really awesome.
Yeah. Anthony Perkins is not, I mean, we've said this before. He's perfect for this role.
Obviously.
Nobody else. I've never seen any type of, like, I've 100% bought in to this guy being insane. 100%. There was no question in my mind Anthony Perkins was insane.
And it's like the Freddy Krueger deal. Like, right, when you look at the screen, you don't see Anthony Perkins.
You do not see him at all.
You see Norman Bates.
Right.
What's even more impressive, not that I would ever dog Robert Englund's acting ability, but what's even more impressive is Anthony Perkins doesn't have...
No makeup.
The...
Right.
Yeah, he doesn't have any makeup on, so it's even that much harder.
Yeah. I'd like to go back and watch some of the other movies just to get some context, like what kind of an actor he really was. But, I mean, I've seen the first Psycho a long time ago. Psycho 3 and Psycho 4. He's incredible.
You're not going to get an argument on me out of that. Okay, there you go. when there's like a brilliant horror movie that does insane amounts of money at the box office and is critically acclaimed, and I used this example last week and probably in Psycho 1, but I'll use it again. The Exorcist is the best example that mm-hmm. I can think of, where the first movie was so good and then the sequels were all obvious money grabs. Mm-hmm. For this being the third Psycho movie, like, I don't think, and this is probably because of Anthony Perkins protecting the character mm-hmm. and the storyline so much. For this being the third Psycho movie, I just don't, I mean, there's a drop in quality, obviously. Mm-hmm. It's not the original Psycho, but it's not Halloween 3. Mm-hmm. It's not Friday the 13th 3. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's still an interesting storyline. You still want to know more about what's going to happen to Norman Bates next.
Yeah, and there's a lot of movies in series that you could almost take that movie out, make it its own thing, change up some characters. But in this case, you can't do that. I don't think it's possible for this movie to exist outside of the Bates Motel and Norman.
Oh, okay. I misunderstood what you were saying.
So, like, you could take, like, you guys talked about Nightmare on Elm Street 2. That movie could have been completely something yes. else.
Yeah, just take Freddy Krueger out.
Take Freddy Krueger out, sure. Do something else with it. It could have been a really good movie at that point.
Yeah.
Even if you tie in the whole homosexual stuff that you're talking about.
Yeah.
I saw it when you guys were talking about it. You're absolutely right. You can't do that with this.
Nope, this is a Psycho movie.
Yeah, this is absolutely.
So, you know how we do this, because you've listened to shows mm-hmm. in the past. On a scale of 1 to 10, you can use halves. Mm-hmm. 10 being best movie, tied for best movie of all time with how many other movies you rank at 10. You can actually rank 0, because I've ranked the movie 0 yeah. before. On a scale of 1 to 10, with those rules, what would you give Psycho 3?
I'm preparing for this. I right after watching the movie and taking the notes, I put a 4. I didn't have all of the context from the previous movies. I have to change that to 5.5 at least.
That's a big jump. One yeah. and a half is a big jump.
And the reason is because for what I just said, this movie when I first watched it, this movie could stand on its own. But knowing the backstory a little bit more and getting a little bit more familiar with the character of Norman Bates, yeah, it deserves more than a 4 for sure.
Anybody who listens to the show regularly, like, obviously I've been on all the shows, so you know how the scale works for me. Anything above a 4 and above is pretty watchable. Mm-hmm. Anything below, you know, maybe under certain conditions. Mm-hmm. I think I'm going to give this movie I'm actually going to be close to where you're at. I'm going to give it a 6. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say the first, maybe Scream is the only one that's close. But the first 3 Psycho movies have a combined score higher than any of the other first 3 of any series that we've done, which I think is impressive.
Yeah.
I mean, at this point, you can see some of the horror cliches sneaking in to the series, but they haven't overtaken the series.
Yeah, no.
The main storyline is still strong. It's still Norman Bates. The Anthony Perkins hasn't become a parody of himself in the character as of yet. We'll see what happens in Psycho 4 mm-hmm. next week. But yeah, I'm gonna give it a 6, which is pretty strong for a third movie in a franchise. As always, if you want to discuss Psycho 3, if you want to tell me whether or not Norman kissed Duke in the back of the car before he pushed him in the swamp, you can email me, you can email Morty, you can email Hammer, you can email Tyler at reszombie7@gmail.com. We'll pass emails on along if you want to send us a message. Hey, Tyler. Tyler's on the Facebook page. I know that. If you're like, hey, man, I really want to talk to you about something because you're Tyler, then you can go to the Facebook page and leave a message there. If you are young and you don't know anything above 140 characters, you can always tweet us at reszombie7 is our handle there. Go to our homepage, zombie7.com. Sign up for the new iTunes feed. Don't forget about the contest. If you leave a review of our podcast on our new iTunes feed, you will be entered in the contest to pick the movie that we're going to do for a one-night stand podcast in a couple weeks. Until then, next week we'll be back with Psycho 4, The Beginning, because every good horror series needs a prequel. And for Tyler, for Morty, my name is Ron Martin. This has been the Resurrection of Zombie 7 podcast. We will see you guys next week. Say goodbye, Tyler.
Goodbye. Could it all be a bad dream or a nightmare? Is it my imagination or have we lost our minds? It's surreal. It's just not believable. A grand absurdity.
When you listen to the show, do you listen on a device or do you have headphones in?
Usually have headphones in, yeah.
Because I usually listen with earphones in. And it sounds like, for some reason, when you have the earphones in, because you know you can hear a lot more with the earphones or whatever, yeah. It sounds like we're just constantly going.
I can't really. I hear it every
like
once
all
in
the time.
A while.
I hear That's it all I hear. And I'm like, I know I wasn't moving the mic that much. That's Hammer.
Yeah.
No. You know what that is?
What? Oh, really? Is that what that is?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I thought he's rubbing his nose on it or something.
No, when he gets pissed off at me, he just goes.
I can't hear that, yeah.